Okay, got my chronometer going. Hi, everybody, and welcome back. I'm beginning to work again on a treatise on white magic. We're in the rules for the astral plane. It's possible you may hear a little background hum here because, believe it or not, it's a very hot day in Finland, and I have one of those little cooler boxes called Arctic Air humming away beneath the desk. So I hope it is not a problem. Melting in one's chair is more of a problem. Well, we've been dealing here with what is called fundamental forms. And the, how to put it, the simplicity of this Rule 9 is such that, in a few words, the entire process of creative unfoldment is summarized. So all life is vibration, and the result of vibration is form. This is what we reviewed together in 9.2. Okay, so all life is vibration, and the result of vibration is form, dense or subtle, and ever subtler as ascension takes place. Really, the entire cosmic physical plane is filled with forms. We don't know about the cosmic astral plane. In a way, the entire universe, when compared to the absolute, is a form, you might say. And in this changing of vibration lies hid, as the pulsating life progresses, its rate of vibration changes, and in this changing of vibration lies hid the secret of form shattering and form building. So what we do have here right now, we have discussed the form of the personality. Now we're going to begin maybe with some other forms which are a little more obscure. The form of the personality, I think, is fairly easy to understand. Okay, so let's take a look. That's just in terms of our past work, and I don't know what day it was, but today, anyway, is the 2nd of August. 2018. This is called the form of the environment. let's just, I think, give this a little acknowledgement. This is really the evolutionary working out of the involutionary group soul. There is much in this anima mundi which is descending into greater complexity of form and then gradually unraveling itself as the evolutionary arc begins to take place. It relates to our contacts, not just exterior, but on the inner planes as well. Because, of course, obviously, there are indeed forms on the inner plane. Sometimes we may think in terms of form and think that, in fact, the outer visible form susceptible to detection by the normal five senses are the only forms. Of course, that's not true. In similarity of vibration comes coherency. In other words, when we talk about the disintegration of a form, if the various aspects of the form are discordant and vibrate inharmoniously with each other, the form will fall apart. If they are the same type of vibration, or if they are harmoniously related to each other mathematically, then the form will cohere. And, well, we can see that, you know, in human groups that the groups hang together if there is harmony. It's as simple as that. When therefore, so in similarity of vibration comes coherency, and this is interesting because it relates the second ray and the fourth ray. The law of coherence is the second ray law, and we're talking about harmonious vibration, not just identicality of vibration, but something called similarity of vibration. When therefore a man raises his vibration and builds anew from the beginning, see, this is one of those interesting little mistakes in the transcription onto the CD-ROM, an extra ohm vibrating there. When therefore a man raises his vibration and builds anew, from the beginning, and alters consequently his key, you see how this is all done in musical terms, it results in dissonance in his surroundings and subsequent discord. Well, this is interesting. Birds of a feather flock together, we are told, and we are also told that at a certain point, humanity itself rejects the individual who is ascending in the fifth kingdom of nature, and by the time he reaches the fourth initiation, humanity rejects this advancing individual because, well, his vibration is no longer similar and the law of coherence has been violated. That doesn't mean that that which coheres is necessarily good. Okay. So let's repeat that. When therefore a man raises his vibration and builds anew from the beginning, this is maybe the dissonance of all new beginnings, Aries, where we're striking out on our own and therefore leaving behind a certain ring pass knot with which we were reasonably coherent, and alters consequently his key, it results in dissonance in his surroundings and subsequent discord. Of course, it may be a very good thing for the advancing individual who is raising his vibration and altering his key. Therefore, under the law, there comes always to the striver, after the mysteries and the manipulator of the law, a period of aloneness and of sorrow when no man stands by and isolation is his lot. Well, this is the law behind this isolation. It is a harmonic law. Interestingly, this is most intense in our series of initiations, at least at the fourth degree, which is ruled by Ray 4 and is therefore under the law of harmony. So the ejection, the isolation, the being on your own, the carrying of your own cross, interestingly enough, the carrying of a cross which is neither, in this case, the fixed cross or the cardinal cross, but your own, this comes at the fourth initiation. One has to ponder on these things because we will go through a bottleneck here. We will have to make that transition all by ourselves. There is no breadth to it, even though the watching hierarchy is standing by, and even the solar angel, which has not yet left its post to return to, let's say, the heart of the sun, the solar angel is still standing by. But then, of course, the isolation becomes very complete when the solar angel wings its way back to one of its sources, and we do have that statement, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And that that can relate to the Solar Angel, which indeed is a supervisory deity. So let's just know that when we head into that type of isolation, and to a certain extent, all the way along the arc of progress, of spiritual progress, we are heading into a period of isolation, and we have to be able to bear that. And that also is when a higher version of the dark night of the soul descends upon us. And it is registered in our soul consciousness and not just in our mental consciousness, the Tibetan tells us. So many things come together here. Therefore, under the law, there comes always to the striver after the mysteries, and I trust that increasingly we are that, and the manipulator of the law, using the law intelligently and with love to advance the divine plan, a period of aloneness, not excessive, because I'm sure it's met by great joy when the cross is overturned, as it were, and out into wider and greater life, the initiate is released. Okay, that's in one of those old commentary stanzas about the dark and narrow tunnel through which we almost pass, at the end of which we see that cross, the rosy cross against a field of blue, and that cross must be overturned. Then indeed we become brothers of the rosy cross, true rosy Crucians, you know, and out into the life of hierarchy, fully fledged in hierarchy. There comes, why am I fixated on this? It seems so deep. There comes always to the striver after the mysteries and the manipulator of the law a period of aloneness and sorrow when no man stands by and isolation is his lot. In lesser degree, this comes to all and to the Arhat. Or initiate of the, maybe he's going to explain here what I've been rambling on about. In lesser degree, this comes to all and to the Arhat, or initiate of the fourth degree, this complete isolation is a characteristic feature. Now, let's remember who is prominent or what planet is prominent at the fourth initiation. And I'll just put it this way, Vulcan, planet of initiation, is prominent here, and Vulcan was thrown out of heaven by his mother, who, a goddess, did not like his appearance. So he apparently was cast out of Mount Olympus where the gods congregate, and we can consider hierarchy a kind of Mount Olympus where the gods congregate. Well, this was an earlier instance exemplifying the aloneness of Vulcan, when really, to put it in the colloquial language, you are between a rock and a hard place. He stands midway between life in the three worlds and that in the world of adepts. I think he's an Arhat and at the fourth degree, and you can understand how indeed he stands here. I don't think that it can be said of any of us who's reading these particular books as we do read them, that we stand here. Some imagine that they do. Some can hold it in sight, perhaps, but at least we are instructed concerning the coming eventualities. His vibration does not synchronize prior to initiation with the vibrations of either group. Under the law, he is alone, you know, in a way, the Garden of Gethsemane experience, really a sixth degree experience, but one which is looked at in terms of the fourth degree, shows this aloneness. The Christ is comforted by an angel from Capricorn, I think it is, and Vulcan has one of those strong relations to Capricorn, especially in the third decanate. But this is only temporary. When the environment satisfies then is the moment of anxiety. When the environment satisfies, then is the moment of anxiety. It indicates stagnation. The application of the law causes primary disruption. This is so good. So let's remember this, and I'll blow it up a bit, you know. Comfort is not necessarily a sign that all is well. and we are forever swimming upstream in our present state and getting battered as we go. And the bears, of course, are eager for a salmon sandwich. And we are the salmon on the way up. So just to have the comfort, although it may please the personality and give a certain kind of self-satisfaction, there's no guarantee there that progress is being made. We pay the price for progress. So all of this relates to what the Tibetan is calling the second form, or the form of the environment. So we're learning, you know, about these various subtle forms, and we have to deal with this particular form. All of us have, or are immersed in, an environment with a particular form, and we should note carefully the harmonies and the frictions which come within this form. We cannot say that when there is discomfort and a feeling of being ill at ease, that it is necessarily an indication of something negative. It may be an indication of something very positive indeed. So evaluate the circumstances, that which stands around you, the form of the circumstances, and see of what nature it is and how it correlates with your responsibility to the divine plan and your spiritual will to move on into greater levels of usefulness. By the way, I did want to say, I think we are in, am I correct here? Yeah, we're in rule 9, and it's 9.3. You know, I'm sort of breaking these programs up. They are largely one-hour programs, but occasionally, if I think I can be more efficient by doing a two-hour program, I will do so. Okay, now the next. So what do we have so far? The form of the personality. We have the form of the environment. Now we have something, an unusual turn of phrase, and the Tibetan notes its unusualness, the form of the devotee. Yes, I mean just that word, for it expresses an abstract idea. Each person of every degree has his devotion, that for which he lives, that for which, in ignorance, in knowledge, or in wisdom, he wields as much of the law as he can grasp. Now note, this means that whether or not we are possessed of the six ray in our ray formula, we do have our devotion. So pause for a minute here and just, you know, before going further, what is your devotion? What is my devotion? Well, you know, probably you will be the one who can best articulate what your devotion may be. And then the refinement of that articulation will increase as you think more and more about it. So he says, yes, I mean just that word. Every person of every degree. And does that mean even pre-initiatory degrees or levels or status? Every person of every degree has his devotion, that for which he lives and that for which, in ignorance, knowledge, or wisdom, let us hope it's at least knowledge or wisdom, He wields as much of the law as he can grasp, and perhaps somehow in the unfoldment of the egoic lotus, we will understand what type of, what is the nature of the object to which we are devoted. Is it happening in the hall of ignorance? Is it happening in the hall of learning? Is it happening then within the hall of wisdom? Later, as the last of the nine petals, where the last tier of the three begins to unfold. Purely physical, may that devotion be centered in flesh, in lust for gold. I'm remembering, I think when I was about 3 years old or something, living through a period in which I now recognize I was repeating some Atlantean desire for gold, it seemed. You know, just we do recapitulate, you know, and how far back we go is a good question. Maybe centered in flesh, in lust for gold, in possessions concrete, and you see many people for whom this is the case. They must have, they must grasp, they must own. And it's not necessarily tied to an astrological sign. It's tied to a stage of life and the quality of desire. He bends all his energies to the search for the satisfaction of that concrete form, and therein learns. So he strives to acquire or hold to or keep near a particular form. And DK goes through these things. Such a good book, you know, and turning every stone so that we can understand as clearly as possible. Purely astral may be the aim of the devotee, love of wife or child or family, pride of race, love of popularity or lust of some kind. To them he devotes the whole of his energy. So, you know, how do you pay for the object of your devotion with energy? You buy it. Using the physical body to fulfill the desire of the astral. And note these things that he relates to the astral aims of the devotee, our normal familial relationships, our nation, the adulation of those around us, or lust of some kind. You know, lust in general is a desire which is short-lived, perhaps, and brings us in a direction usually which does not fulfill the higher objectives of our higher self. Anyway, how are we spending our energy on the objects of our devotion? So, let's ask that. How are we spending our energy on the object? Or we could say, whoa, there we go. I always like these, the ability to reclaim objects of our devotion. Well, just, you know, what are you after? What is the quality of your desire? What do you want? Alcoholics, let's say, have narrowed down their desires, simplified them remarkably so that the next drink becomes that to which they are entirely devoted and all other things are out of the question. Then, of course, there's the devotee of God and trying to see God in all things. Some form or other to which we adhere, by which we are magnetized, toward which we draw or are drawn. He goes on, you know, he's quite thorough here. Higher still, maybe the form of his devotion, love of art or science or philosophy, the life religious, scientific or artistic, To them, he consecrates his energies, physical, astral, and mental, and always the form is that of devotion. Or maybe we can say also that the nature of his devotion creates a form and a relationship. And there is always an object, concrete or subtle, towards which the devotion is directed. So it gets us to think in another way, doesn't it? Really interestingly, what is the object of our devotion? What is the form of that toward which we are devoted? What form is created by the devotion? How does devotion alter the forms towards which it is directed? What is the combination of the devotion that we exercise and the form towards which it is habitually directed? Always the vibration measures up to the goal, finds that goal, passes it, and disintegrates. So the vibration is a form, in a way. And note Sagittarius here. I see the goal. Ho, ho, ho. I wish my cursor would not jump. Okay, and note Sagittarius here. I see the gold. Well, maybe I do. I see the goal. I reach that goal. And then I see another. Yes, our imagination helps to shape the goal towards which our devotion is directed. Sometimes our devotion can be directed towards a very abstract goal, which is hard to put in images or in words or in thoughts. It's simply a vibration towards which devotion is directed. And I just want to put that down. You know, sometimes the object of our devotion, if we can call it an object, is formless. Abstract and not concrete. Maybe some of us are in that position now as we find ourselves devoted to the ageless wisdom and to the forms of vibration which the ageless wisdom takes, not necessarily to specific words, but to a state of consciousness and a state of vibration simultaneously. Very difficult to formulate in the ordinary concrete sense. So anyway, always the vibration measures up to the goal, finds that goal, passes it, and disintegrates. Note that Sagittarius is particularly active at the first and second initiations, PK tells us, and then later, of course, it has to be active at the sixth degree. Pain enters into all shattering of the form and changing of the key. Even in music, you can have painful moments when the key is changed. Maybe we can call that, you know, aesthetic pain. Some people cringe when a key is changed in a certain way, or when a modulation is not smooth, or when it becomes jarring, you know, aesthetically. If we can put it in those terms, it becomes painful. But just remember that there are changings of the form, and death itself is a great changing of the form, and we're used to the idea that death may be accompanied by pain. Pain enters into all shattering of the form and changing of the key. You know, for musicians, this is an important statement. Many lives for millennia of years are spent under the lower vibrations. Our surroundings, our circumstances, that for which we long, are all of lower vibration when compared to some higher possible vibration. As evolution progresses, more rapid is the development and the change of key from life to life, and the change of keys, changes of keys from life to life. So rapid changes of keys. I told you that story once. I think, you know, I think that Johannes Brahms was at that time a student of the famous French composer, César Franck. Franck was a Gemini, Brahms was a Taurus. And if you listen to Franck's music, it's full of modulation, changes of keys within the music. And there's a lesson going on, and Franck is saying to Brahms, "Modulate, Johannes, modulate." And Johannes, being the Taurus, says basically, "Well, why? I perfectly like the key I'm in." Of course, he could modulate, but that shows you the different tendencies of different science. And when you listen to their music carefully, you'll find extremely frequent modulation in the César Franck music. Many lives for millennia of years are spent under the lower vibration. As evolution progresses, more rapid is the development and the change and the key changes from life to life. So how similar is the life a note and key of this particular incarnation to the previous one? Well, maybe it will have something to do with our level of development. Okay, whereas in the earlier stages, one key or tone might be sounded for several lives in their entirety. Interesting. Okay, now, you know, sometimes we look at the rising sign and we say, well, that rising sign can change from life to life, just the way the sun sign can change from life to life, or it may be sustained over a period of lives, maybe seven lives, sometimes I think maybe nine lives. Does that sustainment of the rising sign have anything to do with a particular stage of evolution? It seems to me, in a way, that people who are developing certain abilities along a rising sign line might grasp from it, evoke from it all that they can along the different Dwadashamsa, 2.5 degrees, or decanate line, and thereby spend some time with a particular rising sign. He tells us that the ray may be sustained, personality ray, I suppose, from life to life in the life of artists who are working, I suppose, on some kind of development requiring a constant perfecting. Anyway, just imagine what it would be like to see from the inside out here and to really see the lives as they unfolded and the energies as they were available and the changes as they occurred. I think it would be most interesting. As a man, okay, so it's possible that from one life to the next, the key of the tone might be very similar and the person would be quite recognizable. Sometimes you say, oh, I'm following this person in a series of lives, maybe a famous person, and I recognize that person immediately because the tone is very much like the previous one, previous life. Well, maybe so. On the other hand, changes can occur rapidly for the more developed person, and maybe you would not recognize them if you're looking for a particular type of note or key. So it seems to cut both ways. Recognizability, yes, but at the same time, more frequent change in the more evolved people. Okay. As a man nears the path, the probationary path becomes strewn with many shattered forms. Now, what can I say here? the, oh, okay, hold on. Okay, that's not it. Sorry about that. Collapse the ribbon, yes, and go back. Okay, so the many shattered forms, and the path is the first initiation, and before the first initiation, there is the strong influence of two shatterers, Vulcan, sorry, and Pluto. Okay, so that's one of the reasons as we approach that moment when we start entering the Hall of Wisdom, are taking the first initiation, that there's a lot of destruction because they cannot hold the constantly elevating desire of the aspirant, who is very keen on the expansion of consciousness and the development of the Christ life. As a man nears the path, the probationary path becomes strewn with many shattered forms. Maybe Pisces is one of our last incarnations. There are a lot of destruction in that sign. And from lesser cycle to lesser cycle, he changes the key, often in one life, heightening his vibration several times. Now, maybe we can do that too. Hopefully, we are becoming disciples. And let's just say change can occur without sacrificing coherency. Now, so often, change will break things up. But it's also possible to change in such a way that you can remain coherent in your approach and in the forms you use to save time, you know, so that there's not a complete shattering of the forms you are using, but maybe a transformation, a transmutation, a modification. See, therefore, how the life of all aspirants, if progressing with the desired rapidity, is one of constant movement, constant changes and differentiations, and continuous building and breaking, planning and seeing those plans disrupted. Okay. Well, it's a good warning. It's a good piece of education as we wonder, why must I be so unstable in my life? But let's just say, I don't want that kind of, okay, so let's take a look here. The possibility, okay. So it doesn't have to be that way. The possibility exists that all this can be handled more and more skillfully. But on, and here's the point, the mutable cross, there will be many changes and many disruptions. Now, remember the cross of mutability. That's what we're talking about here. And if anything, as we begin to approach the fixed cross at the first initiation, that mutability will increase. Okay, so when you're asking yourself, am I on the fixed cross? Have I truly taken the first initiation? What is the degree of mutability in my life? Or am I adhering to some soul objective through which I, or in relation to which I use certain forms which may be modified but not so easily exchanged, thrown about? Where am I really? This can be questioned. Okay, I'm kind of hoping that, yeah, the difference between British spelling and English spelling, it can be significant. I guess I'm involved in British spelling simply because my ability to change abbreviations into long sentences got attached to the British dictionary. So there I am. Here we are approaching the fixed cross under Pluto, under Vulcan, under the third ray, which has many changes associated with it, and the heart is gearing up to be affected by the Christ consciousness. It is a life of ceaseless suffering, of frequent clashing with the environing circumstances, of numerous friendships made and transferred. Well, maybe a true friendship is never entirely destroyed, but we transfer our friendships to others who seem to fulfill the vibration under which we are now working. And if that vibration changes rapidly, then our friendships change rapidly. Numerous friendships made and transferred of mutation, ceaseless and constant agony. I guess what he's saying here, from one perspective, is change hurts. And from another perspective, there is nothing but change. There is sort of the Heraclitean perspective. The only thing that is constant is change. And the whole idea that perpetual motion exists somehow, I think, within the great breath. Ideals are transcended only to be found to be stations. We are reminded of the stations of the cross, progressive towards crucifixion. Ideals are transcended only to be found to be stations on the road to higher visions, to higher. Well, the road to higher? Okay. Visions are seen only to be replaced by others. Dreams are dreamt only to be realized and discarded. Friends are made to be loved and left behind. And if the friends are not moving, that is, of course. Maybe your friends, some friends, are really moving along with you, and then they are the true comrades on the spiritual path. And at a certain point, I believe, one finds those friends. Friends are made to be loved and left behind, and to follow later and more slowly the footsteps of the striving aspirants. So there come points in friendships and marriages and so forth. Are you going to go with me? Are you moving? Or do you want to stay just as you are? Are you transforming? These are the questions that can come up in close relationships. And all the time, the fourth form, which is the form of the devotee, or the causal body, rather, is being built. Okay, because he's looking on ahead. The fourth form. So this is a wonderful little section. And even though a little bit abstruse, so much so that he has to say, yes, this is just what I meant, the form of the devotee, I guess we have to say towards what state of vibration, towards what state of consciousness, toward what concrete form, towards what state of vibration, towards what concrete forms are we devoted? Or do we aspire? And that's going to take a little bit of research, isn't it? You know, you can say right off and without too much consideration, I'm devoted to the teaching, but really, what does that mean? What is it about the teaching to which you are devoted? Are you devoted to the light that you experience, or to the increasing feelings of love or increasing feelings of power as your will is strengthened, or to all of the above? Are you devoted to the contacts you may make with other students, or even higher initiates, as you strive? You know, what specifically is attracting you, motivating you? When you see your vision or feel your vision, even if it's abstract, or feel that something towards which you gravitate, just what is it? And that takes plenty of internal consideration. Right, so what do we have so far? We have the just have to remember, don't I? Going back, yeah. The form of the devotee, the form of the environment, and the form of the personality in reverse order, of course. I just gave them. And all of these are forms of which we have to be aware, and some of them we may never think about as forms. I think people do think of their personality form very much, and of their physical form extremely. We are in that kind of stage during the Aryan age, which in some ways is a very concrete age. It certainly relates to, in the early stages, the development of the concrete mind. Maybe later, the development more of the higher mind, and later still of the abstract mind, when the sixth subrace of the Aryan race comes along. But maybe we don't particularly think so much about the form of the devotee and that to which we are particularly related. But we must now, because we've been instructed. Okay, so now this final one, all the while that we're moving on, always seeing something new, always leaving, let's just say, the truly striving, moving aspirant will always temporarily leave behind those who will not similarly move or strive forward. And that can cause a lot of pain, you know. I mean, love can exist between people, and yet one knows one has to move forward. But one is setting an example, too, and then the other individual, friends, lovers, whatever, the other individual will be able to move accordingly and at a later date. Okay, so now we take a look at this fourth form, the form of the causal body. And of course, we all recognize this as a form. In a way, it's located on the fourth of the cosmic ethers, and we always expect that the number four and form will be related. As a matter of fact, I do think that in Esoteric Psychology 1, he actually numerologically relates, or is it force? It's either four, form, or force. He relates two of them, showing the numerological correspondences. A very interesting use of esoteric numerology. So just, look that up. But anyway, the fourth of the normal ethers carries the dense physical body. And in a way, the fourth of the cosmic ethers, well, maybe from the point of view of the planetary logos, the causal body is not found on the fourth of the cosmic ethers, but we begin to wonder whether the higher mind might not be considered in a way an ether, an etheric field when related to the planetary logos, whereas the lowest of the ethers might be considered more formal when related to the solar logos. Anyway, the causal body is found on the higher mental plane, as our diagrams have shown, especially on subplane 3 and subplane number 2. So this is the vehicle of the higher consciousness, certainly higher than the personality, not the highest consciousness, not the highest, but a consciousness higher than the personality, the temple of the indwelling God, and that is the monad, really. And the jewel in the lotus is, in a way, the very center, the holy of holies, you might say, with respect to the causal body, and the monad in extension has its place there. The temple of the indwelling God, which seems of a beauty so rare and of a stability of so sure a nature that when the final shattering comes of even that masterpiece of many lives. I love the way it hints, you know, because when the shattering comes, finally, one is a master. Let's just say Okay, let's see if I can get this. The destruction begins at the fourth degree, but is finally consummated and the debris dissipated at the fifth degree. So it's a kind of a masterpiece. Masterpieces are variable. Sometimes when you're an initiate of the third degree, you have to create a kind of work along your own line. You could call it a masterpiece. It's not really, but for you, relatively it is. And then when you look at the Secret Doctrine and the Theosophical Society in 1875, you realize that DK was in a way working on his masterpiece, whatever that happened to be, or maybe this entire teaching here is a kind of masterpiece, but he did help Blavatsky so much, and that was an aspect of a masterpiece, I suppose. And here we are with this great vehicle of many thousands of lives, which has been arduously and masterfully worked upon and artistically worked upon by a being of great knowledge and beauty, which we call the Solar Angel, and we call it a masterpiece. So a masterpiece need not be technically that which makes of you a master, but it has the idea of a work of very high quality, which must be created before it is possible really to pass on to still greater possibilities of greater light, love, power, and beauty. Okay, it seems of a beauty so rare and of a stability of so sure a nature that when the final shattering comes of even that masterpiece of many lives, bitter indeed is the cup to drink, and unutterably bereft seems the unit of consciousness. I wonder if we can somehow imagine what this is, because in a way, the content of the causal body is transferred into the triad, so nothing is really lost, but perhaps the way it was stored and the beauty of its storing and the particular form that it took, all of that may be lost, as well as the kind of companionship of this great supervising benevolent deity, the solar angel. All of that may be considered lost. So, you know, when you say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And you're drinking that cup to the last. Let's just say what he seems to be relating the emptying of the cup of karma to its very dregs with the departure of the solar angel and the solar angel and the destruction of the causal body. And now the sequence of all this, you know, I'm not sure that has been given to us, but the sequence will be of interest. You know, what happens first in this process? That's the idea. Conscious then only of the innate divine spirit, conscious only of the truth of the Godhead, realizing profoundly into the depths of his being the ephemeral nature of the form and of all forms, standing alone in the vortex of initiatory rites, bereft of all on which he may have leaned, you know, be it friend, master, doctrine, or environment, well may the initiate cry out, I am that I am, and there is naught else. Well, this is a fantastic section. You know, it's something that one would want to memorize by heart so that it really, conscious then only of the innate divine spirit, conscious only of the truth of the Godhead, realizing profoundly and to the depths of his being, the ephemeral nature of the form and of all forms. All forms. Standing alone in the vortex of initiatory rites, that vortex of the fourth degree, bereft of all on which he may have leant, be it friend, master, doctrine, or environment, really alone, you know, the depths of aloneness, or the depths of all oneness, if we can call it that, well may the initiate cry out, I am that I am. A Leo statement, isn't it? Even though, I mean, that in a way is the way Leo is involved with the fourth degree. I am that I am, and there is naught else. We see Leo involved at the fourth degree. Well may he then figuratively place his hand in that of his Father in heaven. In other words, the angel of the presence has introduced him to the monad which he has become fully. Well, maybe let's just say he realizes he is. Maybe we have to wait until the sixth degree to become it fully. And hold the other hand out in blessing to the world of men. So holding on to the monad and blessing the world of men is the position we find this initiate in, holding, holding, come on now, with one hand to the monad and blessing the world of men with the other. This is his position. For only the hands that have let slip all within the three worlds are free to carry the ultimate blessing to struggling humanity. I mean, in other words, note his words. We can, before that time, carry blessing, but not the ultimate blessing. Then he builds for himself a form such as he desires. Maybe we're talking about the Maya Varupa here, a new form that is no longer subject to shattering, but suffices for his need to be discarded or used as occasion wants. I seem to be trying to go too fast here, don't I? Okay, so let's see what we have here. So this may relate to the MVP, Maya Varupa, in all its aspects, not just its physical aspect. Maya Varupa would have to have all of the vehicles that previously were created in another way. So amazing, really. In these days, you will need to ponder on this matter of the form, for with the entering of a new ray, the seventh, and the commencement of a new era comes ever a period of much disruption. We are in it until the forms that be have adapted themselves to the newer vibration. It's happening. Okay. However slowly and disruptively, in that adaptation, those who have cultivated pliability and adaptability, or who have that for their personality ray, maybe third ray, progress with less disruption than those more crystallized and fixed. Well, I think, you know, we can end this here. And I'll just try to copy it to make it a little easier. I would have liked to gone on and done a two-hour program. However, it was not to be. Other responsibilities called. End of a treatise on White Magic Video, program number 15. It's not a half hour. Rules for Magic of the Aspartame, rule 9, 9.3. And whatever page we happen to be on. Hopefully we can locate that without too much, page 265. Okay, just want to make sure that we can, good, all right, good, and good, And good. And beginning, we'll be dealing with 9.4, and we're on page 265, and indeed, this is the 2nd of August. Okay, friends, fascinating material, and I'm finding, I've read this book a number of times, but forced to think about it line by line, word by word, forced to try to say something about it, which may be or may not be useful. I find it to be a wonderful book with wonderful information. So we've studied now the four forms: the form of the personality, the form of the environment, the form of the devotee, and the last one, the form of the causal body. And with these forms, we do interact, and we are changing their nature constantly through that interactivity, and ever higher forms are revealed through ever higher points of tension, which we succeed in generating. So may we live at ever higher points of tension. I'll take this subject on when I get to it. Hopefully, it will be before long. I always hate to leave a paragraph behind. Maybe it's that Cancer Rising thing. I just keep on thinking there's more that can be extracted from it, more that can be extracted. I guess that great realization that we are not the form, but I am that and that I am, or I am that I am the monad, I am the one. I am not even, in a way, the form of the universe. All of that at some point will be dawning upon us, and our realization will be considerable when related to the realization in which we presently live, which will be regarded as of lower vibration. Okay, thank you, and we'll be seeing you soon. We're going to start with program number 16 in this series of rules for magic on the astral plane, and we're still in rule 9. Take care, and bye-bye. I just realized, I may have been talking here quite a bit with my with the pause button hit. Anyway, just to summarize this, we are now finishing program number 15, Rules for Magic on the Astral Plane. We're in rule 9. We finished 9.3, and our next beginning will be with rule number 16 in Rules for Magic, or rather, rule 9 and program 16, Rules for Magic in the Astral Plane, page 265. If the end of this program sounds a little discombobulated, well, maybe it is. Okay. See you soon.